From KXCV KRNW, it's Now Showing with your host, Patty Hawley.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. On this afternoon's program, freshmen and transfer students at Northwest Missouri State University open their show in 1 week. History comes back to life during upcoming tours of an area cemetery, and a vocalist presents the next Downtown Noon concert in St. Joseph. We'll have these stories and more, along with Dr. Carol Fry's movie review, coming up. Northwest Missouri State University freshmen and transfer students in the theater department will take the stage next Thursday for the opening of Neil Simon's The Good Doctor. Professor of Theater Dr. Theo Ross is the director of the upcoming production.
The Good Doctor is, first of all, it is our freshman transfer showcase. And so the conditions under which we produce it are interesting because its goals are not only to create an interesting piece of entertainment for the audience, but also we have a function within the program of orienting our new students to things. And so we're sort of serving a dual purpose. The show, the play itself, is, as you say, called The Good Doctor. It is written by Neil Simon, but it is based upon a series of short stories, or actually very short newspaper articles, that Anton Chekhov wrote at the turn of the century when he was studying in medical school. So to pay the bills, he wrote these short, entertaining stories for newspapers. He eventually, of course, became a playwright, as most of us know. Wrote Russian humor, and so we have the Russian humor mixed with the contemporary American humor, and we put those two things together in a really entertaining evening.
That was going to be my next question. How does that all work together? Is it something that we will be laughing at?
I think so. Of course, Simon has taken just the superstructure of these stories and modernized them. Humor is humor. People are funny no matter when or where they are. So even though they theoretically take place in turn-of-the-century Russia, we certainly see indications of everything that happens today. People will recognize the characters and will be able to relate to the humorous situations.
People have heard of Neil Simon. I'm not sure if they've heard of The Good Doctor. Can you give us a brief synopsis of what the play is?
It is a series of short scenes, or vignettes, actually, eight total, that cover sort of the gamut of humanity. One of the scenes deals with a governess who is a mistress, and talks about how she is supposed to be paid and is getting actually cheated in how much she's paid. There is a scene about a sexton or a religious man who has a terrible toothache and he needs that tooth pulled. It's being pulled by the dentist's assistant rather than the actual surgeon. There is a scene, maybe the best known one is called The Sneeze, where people are going to attend a very fancy evening's performance, and one fellow behind a government official sneezes all over the back of his head, spends not only the rest of the play, but then the next long period of time over several days apologizing for this sneeze, which is really insignificant. So he blows it out of proportion, if you'll excuse the pun. There's a scene where we are introduced to the world's most successful womanizer or seducer, and he shows us how he goes about having the husband help him seduce the wife. So those are just some of the stories. They're all very brief, you know, 5-10 minutes long, so it's a short evening of just entertaining scenes that are connected through the one character, a writer or narrator, who basically is telling us these stories, and they come to life in front of the audience.
You mentioned earlier that this is for the freshmen and transfer students.
What have you seen with those students? Are you pleased with what you see so far?
Oh, we're very pleased. Every year we have a more professional, a more focused group of students. This year, not only are they very skilled and talented and prepared, but there's a very large number of students. One of the reasons we selected this show was because it can accommodate so many, and we do want to give every new student an opportunity to perform early in the semester. A number of these students have previously auditioned for and received scholarships through the program as well as through the university. And many of them are in all of our different types of majors. We have the Bachelor of Arts degree, Bachelor of Science degree in either performance or technology. And we have a large number of education majors, students who are planning to study theater and speech and then go out and teach it in public schools at all levels. So we're very pleased with our fresh persons.
What are they doing in this? I assume they're the actors. Are they also the technical people behind the scenes, too?
They are largely. Now, because quite a bit of preparation needs to go into the design of the show before the freshmen even arrive, we have some upper-class students who are designing and working in other areas. In fact, our scenic designer, Nathan Bowman, and our lighting designer, Tony Reed, are some of our two of our advanced students, and they are really just excellent. They've done terrific things visually for the show. We also have then the production staff. That would be the stage manager, the assistant director, our upper class persons. And for this show, we also have a special position. It's called the mentor, the production mentor. And this is a student who is assigned specifically the responsibility of orienting the new students, helping them. Literally, we take them on a tour of the facilities and teach them where things are. We familiarize them with procedures that we use at university because, of course, they're quite different from what they're familiar with coming from high school. And we introduce the policies and procedures, the faculty, the upper-class students to them. The idea is that by the end of the first month on campus, these new students will no longer feel new. They'll be old hands and familiar with what we are and what we do and how we do things so that they can step into future assignments and roles comfortably.
The Good Doctor will be on the Mary Lynn stage in the Ron Houston Center for the Performing Arts on the Northwest Missouri State University campus next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings beginning at 7:30. There will also be a Sunday matinee performance beginning at 2 o'clock on the 27th. A lot of history lies in our area cemeteries. St. Joseph Museums is hoping to bring some of that history back to life with a couple of cemetery tours. Public Relations Officer Kathy Reno says the first tour will be a walking tour into the heart of Mount Morris Cemetery.
Moonlight Cemetery Walk is an interpretive tour of Mount Morris Cemetery. It's one of the oldest cemeteries in St. Joseph. The wonderful mausoleums you see there were built by the wealthier families that founded the town. But we have Pony Express riders buried there, an English baron, some fascinating stories. So for this particular tour, as the name would imply, the Moonlight Cemetery Walk, it'll start at 8:30 p.m. They'll take an hour-long walk to the lighted graves and hear the stories of people that are buried in Mount Mora, whatever their unique contributions would have been to our country, sometimes to our nation, sometimes internationally. What was important about their lives? What was fascinating?
Do you have a story that you know of that might be similar to something they might hear on this tour?
The tour guide, Suzanne Lear, who's actually researched Mount Mora in the hopes of someday completing a book, usually doesn't share stories even with me because she changes them every year and wants them to be a surprise. But I can tell you past stories have included, well, obviously the story of the English Baron we'll be celebrating, obviously, the Pony Express celebration's coming up. So for that year, she'll obviously be doing the Pony Express riders. She may talk about, I've heard her talk about doctors. What were doctors doing way back then? People that were crossing the trail, what's their story? The story of a character named Maud, was one that was particularly interesting, because for years we were told she was buried, laid out in her wedding dress. And then through further research, we found out that's not quite true. So the story of Maud was included. So you never know. It's always fascinating, and it's always a surprise. And the stories are different each year.
When and where will this be?
For the Moonlight Cemetery Walk, they will meet at the gates of Mount Mora Cemetery, 824 Mount Mora Road. And, of course, the space is limited to 40 participants because it's difficult to, you know, you are going on a cemetery walk. There is some walking involved. And if they're interested, they can call 800-530-8866. This particular tour, all of our Mount Mora tours sell quickly. So if you're interested, I'd give us a call.
How long will the tour last?
It's an hour long.
And do they need to bring flashlights or anything special for this tour?
No, we do light, and we do have escorts. And so that's not necessary, just comfortable shoes, dress comfortably, and be ready to have a good time.
All right, let's talk about the interpretive tour. Tell me what that will be.
This is our annual Voices from the Past Interpretive Tours of Mount Mora Cemetery. For this particular tour, we always have it the two nights before Halloween, in this case, October 29th, October 30th. There'll be two tours each night, one at 6 p.m., one at 7 p.m. For this one, we start at the St. Joseph Museum and the Glor Psychiatric Museum, 3406 Frederick. We're going to begin with Dr. George Catlett, the story of the very first superintendent of the Glor Psychiatric Museum, which was then known as State Lunatic Asylum No. 2 when it was founded in 1874, that atrocious name. But those words had different connotations to them than they do to us. And for Voices of Mount Mora, they do first-person narrative complete with costumes, and the characters come out and tell you the stories of their lives and what caused their death. And once again, you know, what was unique about their lives? Did they create a biscuit maker that took the nation by storm? Were they riding a bicycle, one of the first bicycles ever to be used, and a tragedy struck? Just whatever the story might be. But this is one where I do know the very first story, and it will be the very first superintendent of State Lunatic Asylum No. 2 in St. Joseph. We'll begin with his story right there at the Glor. Then participants will have a chance to enjoy pumpkin bars, refreshments, and then we'll board the bus for Mount Mora.
Do you know how many characters or how many historical figures they'll be able to hear from?
She usually goes 6, 7, 8, depending on the length of the stories. And so we'll start with our story right there at the museum, and then travel for another 7 or 8 characters.
And it's just an hour-long tour?
This tour takes about an hour, too. Yes, it does. Some walking, not a great, you know, not a great deal. But people do need to realize that this is an old cemetery. So we try and stay on the paths, but the ground is not even, and there are paved paths. But even after all this time, so they just need to be aware, comfortable shoes. Voices of Mount Mora sells out each year with a waiting list, so if you're interested, Voices is one where you do need to make your call as soon as possible. And they can let us know at 800-530-8866.
Again, the Moonlight Cemetery Walk will be Friday, October 2nd, beginning at 8:30. The Voices from the Past Interpretive Tours of Mount Mora Cemetery will be Thursday, October 29th, and Friday, October 30th at 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. October's First Thursday Downtown Noon Concert Series in St. Joseph features Sean Agnew, a veteran to these concerts.
Well, I'll be performing a wide variety of songs, from some Handel arias from an oratorio to Mendelssohn, to some Italian bel canto-style songs, some musical theater, a little bit of opera, some French impressionistic music, quite a variety.
So is this vocal music?
Yes, this is all vocal music, with a piano accompaniment.
Who will be accompanying you?
Jerry Anderson will be accompanying me down at First Presbyterian Church.
Tell me a little bit about your background. How did you come to be a performer?
Well, I am a graduate of Missouri Western from 2004. I received a BS in music education with a vocal performance degree. I actually did a noontime series when I was a senior there with another girl who graduated. And I've gone on to be the music director at Ashley United Methodist Church. And now I'm actually finishing up my master's degree at UMKC in choral conducting and vocal performance. So kind of a interesting scenario where I'm graduating. I'm now doing another noontime. So,
why would you want to do a noontime concert?
Well, for me, it actually kind of serves a greater purpose. I'm getting ready for a master's recital in October, and Jerry asked me last year if I would do one, and I said, well, this will be really good timing. So this is actually a good warm-up for me for my big recital, which is happening in the middle of October.
So I would assume when you're working on your master's that you're putting out your very best work, so we should see something really spectacular.
I sure hope so. I've been working since the middle of the summer, pretty diligently on everything, and it's my whole recital, which this is just a portion of the noontime concert, is about 14 or so songs. So, and they're all pretty much new in July. So it takes a lot of work to get them up to the standard that I expect, and then get them memorized and get them ready for performance.
Do you have a favorite piece that you'll perform?
I have a favorite piece in my recital that I'm actually not performing on the noontime. However, on the noontime, I'm also doing a set of Aaron Copland songs, old American folk songs with some very interesting accompaniments, which Aaron Copland is very known for. I really enjoy those.
Why is it that you like that? What do you think people will take away from that?
I'm very much a proponent of music that can influence and touch and speak to somebody, and I think for the general Midwestern person, folk-type songs and songs of youth and songs that they possibly remember from days gone by in their own life, I think those can have the most impact. That's why I personally love musical theater. I think anything on stage in that setting can really impact someone's life.
Is this concert a 30-minute concert?
It's about 30, 35 minutes or so. So it'll start a little bit after noon, a little bit after the noon hour, and then get over around 12:35, 12:40 to give people time to get ready to go back to work.
How challenging is that on your voice to perform for 30 to 35 minutes?
It can be. You have to condition yourself just like anything else. I'm actually getting ready to go to a voice lesson here in a little while, and a lot of that is building in reps, just like you do at the gym. You just need to sing several songs in a row to get your voice getting it used to being that active for that long a period of time.
So you're up to the challenge?
I think I am. I think we're going to find out on October 1st, but I'm sure it'll go great. Very much looking forward to it. I actually sang in First Pres. I went to Missouri Western, so this is a concert series that is close to home.
Sean Agnew's Master's Vocal Senior Recital will be October 16th at 7:30 p.m. at Ashland United Methodist Church in St. Joseph. His concert as part of the First Thursday Downtown Noon Concert Series will be Thursday, October 1st, beginning at 12:10 at the First Presbyterian Church at 301 North 7th Street in St. Joseph. Another St. Joseph vocalist that you may have heard performing on your morning choice right here on KXCV, KRNW, or at various venues in the area is Kathleen Holman. Holman is a jazz musician, vocalist, and educator, and for her, each day can be different.
It could be that I'm doing a solo gig somewhere, playing piano and singing. It could be that I'm the vocalist in front of a trio or quartet. Could be that I'm the vocalist in front of the Ray Alburn Big Band, which has been passed on to me now that Ray's gone. It could be that I'm an educator either at home or at Missouri Western. I'm teaching a few classes out there now in jazz, so I'm really excited to have added that to my portfolio too.
You wear many hats. Do you have a favorite?
No, it really, you know, it's like anything that you do in life. There's some really great moments, and then there's some moments that you just dread, but they all go by just as quickly.
Now, you have some albums. In fact, we play music from those during our morning program on KXCV. Do you have anything like that in the works now?
I am planning to get back into the studio here this late fall to put together a third one.
Okay. While people are waiting for that, do they have opportunities to hear you perform?
Oh, sure. I'm in several places in Missouri. If you're in the Kansas City area, you can hear me at Jardine's or 12 Baltimore, or just keep your eyes glued to the paper or my website, and I pop in here and there. I have performed at 36th Street in St. Joseph, but it closed, so I'm working on finding someplace more local so that the St. Joe and Maryville people, anybody else in the surrounding area, can come there instead of going to Kansas City.
When people hear you perform, what is it that they're hearing? Is it vocal jazz? Is it big band type music?
Yes. I like to say that jazz is pretty much whatever I decide jazz is. It can be the old big band. It can be the old standards that they called their pop back then. It can be tunes from later on that were pop tunes that, you know, you change a little bit of this and that, and voila, it's jazz now. I'll even do that with country sometimes, you know, just to make people go, never thought about that, but I like it.
It sounds like when you're on stage, you're continuing your role as an educator. You're teaching people that any kind of music can be jazz music or can be enjoyed by anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it is my job not just to entertain, because, you know, my number one goal is to make people happy when they hear me. But I guess my number two goal would be to make them understand how important music, the fine arts generally, are in their lives. And I know that I'm just preaching to the choir at this point, you know, anyone who's listening to this. But we have to do our absolute best every moment that we can to get the message out there that education must have music and art and theater in it in order to make each child more well-rounded, and they absorb everything else so much better. Why wouldn't you want that? It's funny how whenever economy seems to be on so many people's minds or their own personal budget, it's so amazing that you can still go out and you can still find wonderful people who have decided to hire a group to play or to have an art exhibit, or to have a play that you can see for, you know, possibly next to nothing. It just depends. You just have to look for it. And things aren't as bad as you thought, because, you know, the arts are there to help you feel better about life.
To find where Kathleen Holman is performing, you can visit her website at kathleenholeman.com.
It's the dog days of the movie season, folks. The time between the big summer releases and the upcoming Christmas season with its big budget films. And in these dog days, there are a lot of real dogs at the movie theater. The umpteenth Halloween, yet another sequel to Final Destination, the Sad Sack Sorority Row, and the soon-to-be-released seventh, get that, folks, seventh Saw movie. Despite a few winners like Julie and Julia and District 9, the pickings will be slim for a while. But here's Kate Beckinsale in Whiteout, a fairly entertaining and workmanlike thriller that has, well, Kate Beckinsale, who lights up the screen like no other actress right now. The previews left many people thinking White Out to be some kind of science fiction or horror film, but it's actually a mystery and a whodunit. In the opening segment, we're on a Russian cargo plane in 1957 over Antarctica. The co-pilot goes to the cargo area and, for some reasons, starts shooting the men there. But in the resulting gun battle, the pilot's killed and the plane crashes. They have some kind of special cargo worth the pilot and co-pilot killing the crew to get it for themselves. The camera focuses auspiciously on a large box, but we don't know what's in it. So, there's the mystery. Flash forward to the present in Antarctica and Kate Beckinsale. Here she's Carrie Stetko, a federal marshal assigned to a scientific base there. This part is even more interesting for the guys in the audience than the slam-bang opener. In a long tracking scene, Beckinsale makes her way to her room, disrobes, and takes a shower in a discreetly fogged shower stall, of course. It's a minute or two of film that has nothing at all to do with the plot, but hey, who's complaining? What's a nice girl and top marshal like Carrie doing in a godforsaken place like this that has no potential for crime but has to have a marshal? Well, she has a past that resulted in a long-term guilt trip and some kind of psychological need to punish herself, and we get occasional hints and flashback. But as it turns out, Antarctica isn't crime-free after all when Carrie finds a body on the ice far from the base. So how did this body, one of the personnel at the base, get miles away with no sign of transportation in 50 below weather? It's a mystery. But later investigation shows that something's buried below the ice and someone's been digging. It's no surprise to anybody when it turns out to be the Russian plane with corpsicles of the crew still there. And then the murders start piling up. Whoever dug in the ice got the box, and the thief and killer has to still be on the base because there's nowhere to go. Another complication is that the Antarctic night is about to set in. The personnel have to leave the base within 3 days or spend the next 6 months there with only the penguins for company. Oh yes, there's a huge storm moving in. And so it goes with Carrie trapped on the station with a murderer. But who is it? Was it Robert Price, who claims to be a UN investigator? Was it Dr. Fury, the apparently benign father figure to Carrie? Or was it, well, you get the picture. Whiteout offers nothing new. The special effects establishing the Antarctic winter are good, with Carrie being caught outside and trying to save herself repeatedly with the ropes connecting buildings. And it's a standard whodunit mystery and action-adventure plot. These films are usually set in some kind of enclosed place with the unknown murderer on the loose, sort of thing Agatha Christie was so good at developing. But the Divine Agatha would never have included so much gore. The autopsy scenes are right up there with the CSI programs in NCIS. Then there's a mystery over what was in the box that's worth killing all these people, and it turns out to be a lot less important than we've been led to believe. So, Whiteout's hardly original, but it's well-paced, entertaining enough, and a good popcorn movie. I'll give it a grade of B- because, oh yes, did I mention? It has Kate Beckinsale.
You can find information about these events and links to art organizations on the KXCV KRNW website at kxcv.org. You can also listen to archived editions of this program by clicking on the Now Showing link. Please join us again next Thursday. In the meantime, have a great weekend. For KXCV KRNW, I'm Patty Hawley.